Great to be here.
Always a pleasure.
Patrick, let's start this time with you. Your story is about concussions, a subject always worthy of discussion as far as I'm concerned. What do you got?
So this is a story from my Vice Sports colleague, Aaron Gordon, and it's about scientists who are working on blood tests that will identify what's called biomarkers of concussions. And the idea here is very intriguing because, you know, right now it's very difficult to diagnose these things. You can't see them the way you can see a broken arm. So in theory, these tests would take out a lot of that guesswork and confusion. You know, a football player gets hit in the head, these certain chemical markers are released into the bloodstream, and the doctors say, you can't play, you need to sit out. The hope is that maybe we get to the point with this that we can even do it right on the sideline. And this would be really good because it would be better odds of protecting these athletes. And I think it's going to impact the sport profoundly in a couple of ways. First of all, it's just going to be a lot harder to deny the problem. It's very much like the Ray Rice video. It's one thing to read a police report, but it's another thing to see Jhené Palmer being knocked out. Secondly, it could be very positive in terms of studying and understanding this problem and coming up with better medical treatments and interventions. That's a really good thing. The flip side of that is it could be pretty bad for the football industry because instead of guessing what the extent of the problem is here, we're going to be able to see it and measure it in ways we weren't able to.
Rachel, Patrick is characterizing this new technology as, quote, intriguing. Are you intrigued?
It's absolutely intriguing. There's no question that there's a huge appetite for tests that better diagnose concussions. I think right now we're really the Wild West. I get pitches every day from companies selling new protective equipment, concussion protocols, et cetera. So I think it's going to take time for the newest technologies to prove if they really work and do what they say they'll do.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I am very, very skeptical of all of this new stuff. First of all, a player can still deny that there's anything wrong with him, and the people giving the tests aren't going to know who to test. Secondly, subconcussive hits are probably something much more responsible for brain damage than concussions. Football is an extremely dangerous game in which people get banged in the head a lot, and no number of new tests and technologies is going to change that very much.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that, Bill. And by the way, you know, when you mentioned the idea of subconcussive hits being potentially a lot more dangerous, which I think a lot of research is indicating, I think, like I said, that the bigger thing here is maybe not necessarily the on-the-sideline return-to-play test, but it's the just being able to see this damage, to see it in ways we weren't able to see it before. That's where I think you're going to see the biggest impact.
My topic this week is the NFL's Rooney Rule, so-called Rooney Rule. It mandates that NFL teams have to interview at least one minority candidate when they're going about the hiring of a new coach. You can argue that this rule has worked. You can also argue that it has not worked at all. Recently, college football and the English Premier League have also talked about adopting something like the Rooney Rule, although they've decided that they won't do that. I think they have made the right decision. First of all, it's shameful that in 2016, the NFL should need to nudge team owners and GMs this way. There are several qualifications to be an NFL coach. You have to take yourself far too seriously. You have to develop paranoia, and you have to prefer sleeping in your office to sleeping at home. None of these characteristics has anything to do with race. Has any general manager ever said, gosh, we're only interviewing this minority guy because the rule says we have to, and then, my golly, we find out he turns out to be a great guy and we're going to hire him? It doesn't work that way, and the only way there's ever going to be a level playing field, so to speak, is for general managers and owners to not come from the old boys club that has always supplied general managers and owners in the past. And that's what's going to change things, not a rule that says, hey, you have to talk to somebody before you hire the other guy.
Actually, Bill, I did talk to an athletic director once who interviewed a guy not because of the rule, but out of an effort to diversify his coaching ranks.
Right.
He didn't hire the guy, but he said, I was very impressed and surprised, and that coach got a head coaching job very soon after that.
Well, that's
school.
Good. That's good. And that was at the college level?
Yeah. I think, actually, there's no question that the Rooney Rule has helped the NFL. You look no further than Mike Tomlin, coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, to give evidence to that. He was hired in the wake of the Rooney Rule. I actually was living in Oregon when the state implemented a law that was very similar to the Rooney Rule. And the biggest problem with it is that it doesn't have any penalties. So I think if colleges could find a way to do this nationwide, I would support it. I think it couldn't hurt. But there has to be some teeth behind it. Otherwise, schools can ignore it, as has happened on occasion in Oregon.
And as has happened on occasion in the National Football League. Patrick, what do you think?
Well, first of all, no penalties at the college level. That sounds a lot like the way the NCAA does not enforce its concussion protocols. Getting back to that. But in terms of the Rooney Rule, I think both of you are right. On one hand, yeah, in the bigger sense, getting hired is all about who you know. I mean, it's the old Chris Rock joke. You know, everybody in this room got hired through a friend. Now, in the case of football specifically, look, yeah, this rule isn't going to just result in a deluge of minority hirings, but it is important to get people in the room, to get people FaceTime, to get them in the process of interviewing and learning about that. I think there is a lot of value in that. By itself, it isn't going to get rid of that old boy network, but it's a good positive step, and I don't see a real problem with it. The legal challenges aside, which are a whole other can of worms.
Finally, Rachel, what good news do you have for us this week?
Well, this is great news for people who set New Year's resolutions to work out more, and that is that you can stop doing sit-ups. There are some fitness experts who say that sit-ups are potentially dangerous to your back. They can cause pain and injury. And a recent editorial in Navy Times suggested that the U.S. Navy kicked a sit-up out of its required fitness test. Mm. So there's a growing kind of groundswell to kick out the sit-up. Of course, some critics say that this is just another piece of evidence of the weakening of America and we need to toughen up, and I did sit-ups, so should everyone else.
Patrick, are you happy to learn that you no longer have to pretend to do daily sit-ups?
Well, I'm ahead of the curve on this. I haven't been doing sit-ups for a long time, and I actually like exercising, so don't take that the wrong way. But no, I mean, look, if you're going to replace sit-ups with sitting around and, you know, eating nachos and drinking beer, yes, this is part of the weakening of America. But if you're doing better and more effective workout stuff, this is a great thing. And you, when you do talk to trainers and you talk to, you know, in covering sports, I talk to people that actually train professional athletes. You don't see professional athletes doing a whole lot of sit-ups. They don't really work.
Yeah. And as I understand it, planking is much more effective than doing sit-ups.
And much more effective on social media, too.
Yes, it's much better on social media. It makes much more interesting videos, and people do it in all sorts of funny places and make themselves instant celebrities. So no problem.
Can I add one thing? We need to have a grandfather clause here. Because if we're talking about, if you guys have seen Rocky IV, the training montage, the famous training montage, where Rocky is like hanging from a barn roof and doing upside down sit-ups against gravity, you know, while Ivan Drago's go, you know, taking steroids or whatever. We need to grandfather that type of sit-up in. If you can do that, you're probably in good shape. And if it's terrible for your back, who cares?
You're going to beat Drago anyway when you get into the ring, so no problem.
And Creed 2 is the other result. Apparently that's coming out.
And, you know, Patrick, I didn't see any peer-reviewed published studies on those. So, you know, they might be just fine. Just go ahead and keep doing them.
We don't know anything yet. We need a 50-year perspective study, just like with brain damage at football.
Well, these recommendations, such as eliminating sit-ups, are only for, you know, the 99% of us who aren't Rocky.
Exactly right. Let's investigate punching meat. We need to look into that, too.
My guests for Three Stories You Should Know have been Rachel Bachman, who writes about fitness and exercise for The Wall Street Journal, and Patrick Ruby, who covers all things concussion plus other sports topics for Vice Sports. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.